Hey, we're in .NET land with Emo and David. Why don't you guys quickly introduce yourselves?
Sure. My name is Emo Lanfrov. I'm a program manager on the .NET framework team.
And I'm David Keane. I'm a dev on the .NET framework team.
So guys, big announcements that we had with the Connect event and launch. What did we announce and what does it really mean for developers?
Well, I think the short summary is that this is like epic times to be a .NET developer, right? So what we announced roughly 2 weeks ago was that our new .NET core stack is or will be entirely open source, which basically includes the entire library stack as well as the runtime layer itself. And then the other thing that we talked about was the fact that we will also support cross-plat, which basically means that we will support not just the Windows version of that stack, but also a Linux version and a macOS version of that as well. And the whole stack will be developed in the open. So we basically, as I said, we open sourced it, so it's on GitHub. So you can already browse the source code, and you know, we will party on the code, make it cross-plat, and yeah, I think that will be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think it's pretty huge from an announcer perspective. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of what's actually available on GitHub today for folks, because there's the full .NET framework in the core, and what's kind of available on GitHub, and what is the open source plan between those two?
Yeah, so like if you generally think about it, like we have essentially two stacks. We have the .NET full framework, or the .NET framework, and then we have .NET Core on the other side. And you can think of .NET Core as essentially a fork of the full framework, where the implementation was, you know, our primary focus of the implementation was to have a super well-factored implementation. And so, you know, they're essentially, you know, similar code bases in the sense that they still do the same thing, like the BCL is more or less the same, but they're just factored differently. The assemblies are, you know, separated out in a nicer way. And if you look at the stack itself, like we're using our internal engineering system today, you know, it's all based on Team Foundation Server. And in order to bring this into an open source world, we really believe that in order to be successful, we need to be able to literally have the engineering system itself be in the open. So we don't want to have like snapshots of the source that we give you every once in a while. We need to give you the real deal. In order to give you the real deal, though, there's engineering investments that we have to do. We have to decouple, you know, our internal system up to the point that we can take certain libraries and put them on GitHub. And so what you see today is not all of .NET Core. Basically, what you see on GitHub today is essentially what we were able to do in, like, I don't know, 2 months or something like that. And so what we have today is pretty much some of the out of band libraries that we had out for a while, like Immutable Collections, the SIMD Vector Library,
Metadata
Reader that Roslyn is using to parse assemblies. And XML, and you know, over the next couple of months, we will add more and more to it. You know, as we are checking it out from the internal engineering system and be able to move it into the public.
So, why do this? Is the idea that you actually want customers to contribute, or what's kind of the motivation?
Yeah. So, if you look at generally, like, why would you do open source? From our point of view, there's essentially two big pros to do open source. The very first one is, if you want to do cross-plat for real, you kind of have to be an open source stack. I mean, it's not technically a requirement to be an open source stack, but if you look at all the other cross-platform tools that are out there, like if you look at Linux or, like, you know, web browsers, the more if you move it into the open, the one thing that happens is that the people who care about certain architectures will jump in, right? And in our case, you know, Mono is out there for, I think, over 10 years now. And so they already have a lot of experience and expertise with supporting Linux and Mac in particular. And so by open sourcing it, you know, we can all benefit from that community, right? And then, you know, we can put the funding behind it from the corporation standpoint, right? I mean, Microsoft will put serious resources into that. But I think as far as, you know, experience goes and as far as the ability goes to do things quicker, you know, if you're open source, it's just the most sustainable way of doing cross-plat. The second part of it is, you know, about 2 or 3 years ago, what we started on our team is we shipped more and more of our libraries in an out-of-band fashion. And so out-of-band basically means we don't put it in Windows where the full framework is, because that means that we are basically constrained by the release cycle of Windows or, you know, the full framework itself, which is only, you know, every couple of years or so. And so by moving out of band, we are able to ship libraries in a fairly, you know, frequent basis.
And by that you mean like NuGet
exactly,
library ship,
yes,
is NuGet?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And so if you look at, you know, a good example would be Immutable Collections. So, in, you know, historically, when we ship a beta of the framework, you have like a time window of like 3 minutes to report bugs, because you know it's already so locked down and so close to shipping that we can essentially only really address super impactful bugs. But as far as design change requests go, yep, that's already too late. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of unfortunate, because the first time the public actually gets the bits is when it's already too late to provide serious feedback. With NuGet, we shipped immutable collections, the very first version. And if you look from our point of view, the amount of work that we put into this like first version was significant. We did lots of API reviews, lots of people got involved, we got partners adopting it, and we felt really good about the initial API that we put out there. But you know, immutable collections was on NuGet in beta for like 8 months. And we did absolutely do make API changes based on customer feedback. And so the design that we ended up shipping as a stable release was a lot better than what we could have shipped if we would have done it the traditional way. And that was effectively a function of us being out of band, customers being able to very easily take with the library, play around with it in the context of a console app, and provide feedback. And so from our point of view, this whole, you know, being agile basically means you have a, you know, you shift the communication that we historically had more towards real time, right? Because if you have a 3-week release cycle, what happens is that you're at some stage of this internal, like, you know, planning process, execution, stabilization, but you know the customers are still living on the, you know, what you shipped last. And so the interesting part here is that you basically have this disconnect between what the customer gives you feedback on and what your reality looks like, right? So you basically always live in the past, so to speak. With NuGet, you move this whole thing to real time. So the thing that we care about is the same that our customers care about, because you're literally, you know, using the same thing. And open source is pretty much the ultimate version of agile development, because every check-in, everything we do, is immediately live on GitHub. So not just the PM is doing our real-time communication, also the devs can basically participate in the real-time communication on GitHub. And so as a community aspect to it is just, you know, enormous, right? Because you know you can literally, like, you know, ref the design with the customer, and you can, you know, they can give feedback in real time, and they can actually, you know, see changes happening in real time as things unfold. And so these two things, like the cross-plat part and the community part, are pretty much the, you know, the biggest drivers why we open source the framework.
So we did this a couple of weeks ago, right?
Yep.
By now, maybe it's tomorrow is, by the time this video ships, it'll be 2 weeks. But like, who's actually, have you gotten external contributors to .NET?
Yeah, do you want to talk about them?
So absolutely. I mean, in fact, we were quite overwhelmed with how many people contributed. Within the hour of it going live, we already had a pull request to make a fix. Adam Relf, I'll give him a call out on this. And since then, we've had, we've probably done over about 100 pull requests, of which, you know, 40% is from the community. So we're getting massive, you know, input already from the community, which is great. You know, we got API additions, we had immutable changes that kind of sped up the appending of results to the collection. We had, I'm trying to think, test changes,
yep.
Comment changes, all sorts of changes, and it's really been great, yeah.
So, like, imagine I'm a .NET developer, I have my own list of things, utilities, maybe I've done them as, like, extension methods, right?
Yes.
So, like the, you know, folks using system.link, they like two array, and they want to add two collection and two read-only connection. Like, pretty, I mean, we're talking maybe 5-6 lines of code.
Yep.
Is that something you all would accept as a pull request?
Yeah, so the one thing that on our side, like if you think of pull requests, like the one thing that is worth pointing out is that from our point of view, we really want to blur the line between the community and Microsoft, right? We really want to basically come to the point where we can say, it doesn't matter who writes the code. What matters is that we have a bar. And so the bar is, you know, that the, you know, has the right architecture. It's, you know, aligned with the product roadmap. You know, the quality is there. We have test coverage. And then, you know, another big part is API design itself, right? I mean, the framework, the one thing I think the framework, you know, .NET in particular did differently than most of the other stacks that we pretty much from day one absolutely cared about usability of the APIs and had very rigorous reviews about, yep, that's a great design from a dev, but that's not approachable by my model, so please improve that. And so the one thing that we need to figure out on our side is like, what's our process for dealing with these change requests? Our goal is essentially, if an API is good, we will take it. I mean, there's really no like, oh no, only Microsoft can provide APIs or anything like that. But We want to, we have internal processes right now that are, designed to be basically, on the Microsoft campus, so to speak, but we haven't really made the tools or the processes available so that other people can participate in these reviews. And I think that's a step that's necessary to have a chat about, or can I add these two APIs, yes or no?
I think one of the things that will become clear as you go to CoreFX, .NET/CoreFX on GitHub, is that we're still trying to figure out a bunch of stuff, right? We only started this not too long ago, a couple of months ago, and we really want to do this in the open, and we want feedback on how the process works, what's the code review guidance, what coding standards you want to have, what's the performance testing that we can do, unit testing, what does that all look like? And we're still trying to figure that out as we go. So API reviews is something that we have a very good process internally for doing that, with a senior team that looks over every API addition to the framework. We have to figure out how to basically bring that out in front of the customer.
I think it'd be interesting for people, it's sort of the classic kids thing, how a bill becomes a law. Like, how does a method,
look into the sausage factory.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So what is kind of the internal process like? I mean, as nice as it could be, maybe.
Yeah, so I mean, the one thing that
too much of the sausage.
Yeah, I think the one thing that we're just doing this video here, right? So I think what we want to do over time is basically open up the view, to how we do things, right? So we talked about stuff like maybe we should record one of these API review sessions so that people get an idea of what kind of feedback people get, how the process looks like, and then basically move some of the stuff into provide more visibility into how these things work, and then a next step could be that we, also just publish the notes. So I think if you look at C#, for example, Matt Storgerson, who is the designer for C#, essentially, he basically publishes the notes. And so if you go on Coplex, all the language design proposals for C# 6 are there. And there's actually very detailed notes about, why did we decide to do this? Why did we decide to do that? And internally, there's actually a SharePoint site where they literally have every single discussion they ever had on the C# team since V1, on a SharePoint side. So if someone said, I have a smart idea, Metz can say, hold on, we had this in 2003, and here's why we didn't do it. And I think that's super valuable, right? Because there's so much insight into why you do certain things, and why do you reject certain things. And one thing that happens over time is that the culture changes or the requirements change. So you said, oh, we rejected that. But if you know why you rejected it, you can question that. Do these reasons still make sense, yes or no? And so on our side, we even in general, we don't have a super good database for that. It's mostly, based on human interaction and knowledge, and that changes over time too. But basically, our standard is the one book that Christoph wrote at some point, right? And everybody on the team is required reading that. But it's 350 pages or something
right.
like that. As far as decisions go, I think documenting them, submitting them publicly is a an interesting source of insight.
Yeah, and doing it on the side as well, right?
Yes.
Providing the same sort of feedback that we have internally to customers.
Yes.
And if you go on some of the our site today, you'll see us providing similar feedback to Microsoft employees already on there. So you can kind of see how we treat code reviews and what kind of standard we hold and we disagree like every normal human being. we're not. It's great to have disagreement because, having this one mindset that this is the right way is kind of the wrong thing.
It's very dangerous actually, because then you're not actually thinking about alternatives, right? You want to have a diverse set of people that think from different angles on the same problem. The one thing on the code review that I think is interesting, moving the code into the open and basically have a mirror over when you check in here you see it there, is just one part of it, right? Successful open source means you have to have the development process in the open, right? Because the whole point is that in order to get contributors, you want to provide enough context for these contributors to be successful, and that means they have to be able to see how you run the show, so to speak, right? So when we do code reviews, right now it's all internal, right? Basically, we use internal tools to do code reviews. But with the stuff that we moved on GitHub, members on the team will also submit pull requests. So there's really no difference between an external contributor and an internal one. Both will submit a pull request. Both will get feedback from Microsoft people as well as the community. And then, you know, things get decided and things go either in or not in, right? But like, this really blurs the line between, you know, it doesn't matter who you are, right? As long as you have good ideas, like, you will totally have a discussion with you.
Yeah, and you know, so one of the classic things is we do have internal tools that we use to scan code. You know, maybe it's wording things like that it's internationally correct. Like, you know, don't use this; it's bad in country XYZ. Have we thought about making those things even as exes available? So, like, for example, you think about the process of somebody does a check-in, but maybe even before they did the check-in, they had to go through, you know, these internal tools, you know, security tools, virus checkers. Like, there's just a number of things that you can imagine you want.
Yes. Yeah. So our aim is for, at least for every pull request, that they do run through some sort of CI system that kind of runs the same process that we run internally, to a degree. You know, there's tough things that are, you know, processes that run over multiple days that kind of you find out later, some of that compat testing and so forth. But we totally want to bring out our tools. Like, we have some very good tools internally. Imo wrote
some of them.
Our code review tool, for example, is absolutely awesome. API review tool is absolutely awesome. And we're trying to figure out how we can kind of bridge the gap between that and GitHub at the moment. You know, maybe it enables you to see an outline of APIs, and you can comment in line on them and so forth. And maybe those comments turn into, you know, a two-way merge between, you know, so that they appear on GitHub and so forth. But yeah, as you can kind of tell, we're kind of making this up as we go kind of thing. Mm-hmm. We've literally got a giant board with sticky notes that we say, okay, someone needs to tackle this. All right, figure out what we're going to do with API reviews. All right, that's in progress thing right now. And, you know, figure out what we're going to do with security reviews. How are we going to handle those things? You know, how are we going to handle the loc stuff? You know, there's how are we going to handle XML docs? All sorts of things, right? There's a bunch of complex internal processes for shipping Microsoft software. And we want to bring them out, but we want to bring them out in a way that doesn't bring all this 15-year legacy of infrastructure out to the into the wild. I don't think that's going to be a win.
No, in fact, like, I mean, from our point of view, the one spirit that we have on our team is that when we did this, you know, when we started shipping binaries on NuGet like 3 years ago, we said one of our goals that we have is we only add process when we know we need it, right? But at the end of the time, like, process is super valuable too, right? So there's this sweet spot between not enough process and too much process. But the canonical wisdom that we have on our team is mostly driven by the full parameter chips with Windows, which has an insanely high bar for pretty much everything, right? And in order to be agile, I mean, one saying, you know, I think Nick told me the story about a consultant, right? If a consultant doesn't miss at least one flight a year, you're spending too much time at the airport. And that's the same thing that I think is true with processes. Like, if you don't break things every once in a while, like, your process is too rigorous because you're now optimizing for not any risk taking, right? But then, the purpose of open source is like experimentation and exploration. Like, you know, does this make sense? Can this go this way? And so you kind of want to foster that, you know, open mindedness for things, and you also want to give people enough playground so that they can actually play out ideas. And it's also true for us. So I think, you know, we want to add process back, but we want to basically start with, you know, essentially no process, and then we build up from there. Because we really believe that we need a lot less process, and the process that we still need, probably the tools need to change, or the way we do these processes need to change anyway. So bringing out what we have is, yeah, as you said, not probably helpful.
Yeah. But in saying that, I mean, there are some goals that we still want to maintain. That,
oh yeah, absolutely.
Of the full .NET framework, like, compatibility is one of those things, right? We're not out of the compat business. Whenever I hear people saying that we're shipping on NuGet, they go, "Oh, so things aren't going to be compatible anymore?" No, we are still going to have the API compatibility and behavioral compatibility, the goals that we had for the full framework. Security is another one. You know, we're not out of the security business either. Some of the problems that we've had, though, in talking about compatibility, actually, in some of the problems that we've had with the full .NET framework is that because we shipped this thing on, you know, 1.8 billion machines, the bar for making changes is extremely high, right? So when we make, we play the normal rules like, you know, don't remove members and don't change return types and return values and things like that. But there's other implicit compat, dependencies that apps take that you would not assume to be an incompatible change. Like adding some of the changes that we've made recently that's kind of broken apps recently is added APIs, added an overload to a method which broke someone's reflection of that guy, added an interface, removed an internal type, removed an internal method. These kind of things are changes that are very difficult to make in the full .NET framework. But as we move to this open source NuGet world, where the developers are in kind of control of their destiny, they decide when they upgrade to the next version, and we don't go and ship this thing on underneath their apps. They test their app on the bits, and then they ship that. That's the goal. In that world, these kind of implicit compat that we call internally goes away, and we don't need to worry about those, or they're less of a worry. The developer makes the choice at the time that he adopts the library to take on those compat breaks, and if he's doing the wrong thing by assuming that there's only going to be one overload, then he makes the change when he adopts the library or rolls back to the previous version.
And you mentioned ASP.NET Core. This is one of the things that maybe folks who haven't played with it talk about some of the side-by-side things and why this having ASP.NET Core is nice in that you don't have to worry about some of these compat issues upgrading the framework, exactly. For example.
Yeah, so one thing that, before we go there, one thing I want to mention is that, on our side, as David mentioned, the quality bar is still the same, right? The difference that I want to draw is that, it's a continuum, right? The thing I've had in the past is that basically everything we did was slowed down by our desire to ship stable bits, right? The problem is that everything is moving at the slowest common denominator, right? Versus in the new world, basically we have three tiers, right? Tier number one is open source, so basically people can go crazy almost, right? You can play out, you can build locally without ever ever talking to us and can play around with it here. The next layer may be, you submit a pull request and now more scrutiny gets applied, right? The next layer is we ship these, code changes as NuGet packages that we do some testing. We do them on the, individual library case. So we test this one library. So if you take 15 of those, they may not play nicely together. So the next tier would be, we test the set, and then that's the set that we ship with Visual Studio, in the same way as it happens today. So when you have this multi-tier approach, what happens is you don't compromise your ability to be super agile and super fast at the benefit of the slowest moving target. However, you still retain that quality of the slowest target. It just means it lags behind somewhat, right? So you have this sliding window of innovations happening here and stable things are happening here. And that's essentially a model that pretty much all open source projects, did over the years. I mean, the canonical example would be Linux, right? You can build your own kernel every time, but the point is that if I want to get a computer, I don't care, right? Just give me a version of Linux on my machine with not just the kernel, but with everything that plays nicely together, right? And and so that's the same here. So you can go do your, go your own, build your own, but you can also just do following your project in Visual Studio, and then somebody decided what that thing is that you're going to get. And so I think that's a nice segue to ASP.NET, because if you do found new, ASP.NET application, you basically get, a predefined set of packages that were tested and signed off as a unit. And so that's essentially the same experience people have today with ASP.NET, except that behind the scenes, the bits that you're using happen to be delivered by NuGet and happen to be built as an open source project. And so that's
and a side by side. So in the past, we had this.
Do you want to draw that actually?
Yeah,
that would probably be helped.
Going to the whiteboard.
Going to the whiteboard. Yes. In the past, we kind of had this giant, .NET framework on the box, And this thing was, you know, machine wide, basically. And you know, we may do the odd side by side version as well. So if you go, you know, framework 3.5, 2.0/3.5 is side by side with 4.0. But these things are machine wide. You know, installing a patch or you know upgrading to 4.5 or 4.5.1 basically replaces the bits for the entire machine. Now, with the new ASP.NET VNext on top of .NET Core, basically we grab basically a framework and a runtime, and we ship it side by side. So this thing becomes, you know, carries. If you imagine your app here, this just, right? You know, this maybe contains some views, you know, controllers and so forth. .NET Core effectively, essentially becomes part of your app, right? And your
and
app.
What is in .NET Core? Like, for example, is that the runtime, just-in-time compiler?
Yep.
Like, because .NET, you know, you hear about ASP.NET VNext not actually needing to be pre-compiled because it's using Roslyn. So.
Yeah. Sure. Good question.
Kind of click into that.
So .NET Core is kind of two things that we kind of group together. The first one is the runtime. So we have this new runtime called Core CLR, because it's smaller than the full CLR. In this, you know, you have the JIT, you have the VM, you know, type system,
GC,
and so forth, right? The typical things you find in a VM, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, on top of this, we have what we call, what traditionally was the BCL or the framework, right? We have a bunch of libraries on top that sit, kind of, you know, imagine, you know, like we have, you know, collections here and reflection and all the traditional things that networking and so forth. So. When we talk about .NET Core, what we're talking about is Core CLR plus the BCL, right?
Okay.
And the framework on top. The way that the stack works is ASP.NET VNext just sits on top, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have a host that kind of hosts the bootstraps the Core CLR, and then adds a bunch of extra features on top, like dynamic compilation, you know, automatic NuGet resolution and so forth. So, you know, MVC sits in here. You know, the new, you know, MVC/WebAPI. You know, that's pretty much the layer diagram looks like this. Core CLR sits at the bottom. You know, then the framework kind of sits on top of that. And then on top of that is the app model, the ASP.NET VNext. So
one question on here, kind of while we're looking here. So we talked about what's open source, and what's open source today isn't Core CLR, but rather a series of the middle blocks, like immutable collection.
Yep. So we have what we have today, and what we're going to have by build next year, which is, so today we have a few of these libraries that we've grabbed, you know, like immutable, XML. And metadata, as Imo was mentioning before. But the aim, and also ASP.NET VNext is already open source, completely open source,
mm-hmm.
on GitHub. The aim in the future is we're gonna basically have the entire stack, right down to the VM. So, you know, this whole thing on GitHub. So if you wanna look at the JIT, you're gonna see the JIT. If you wanna look at the GC, you can see the GC and type system and so forth. So the aim is to have basically the entire stack. And every couple of weeks, you know, we're adding new libraries. You know, we've got a bunch of new libraries coming on right now, which is file system, console, process, you know, data flow, MEF, a few others.
So, but these are going to be designed to also work on Linux, right?
Yes.
So is it going to be, there's two implementations, if you will, and everything's an interface, or
yeah,
how's
so,
that going to work?
Yeah, so how's that going to work? So that's interesting. That brings to an interesting point. So the way that we're going to basically design this thing, so first of all, the interesting thing about .NET Core, which I haven't talked about, is that .NET Core is also kind of runtime agnostic, in that on the client, some of you may have heard about .NET Native, which is basically ahead of time compilation for C Sharp, right? So it itself is its own runtime. On top of this, we kind of put this very thin layer that exposes the things that you would expect from a runtime, and that a runtime kind of you need things on top of it to talk in terms of, like, object, you know, string, you know, delegates and so forth.
This seems like the system.
Yeah, this is the system. So we expose this kind of thin layer on top, that even though the implementations between Coursera and .Native are extremely different, the semantics are completely different, we expose this common interface on top that we call them contracts. And we've talked about it a few years back, but contracts is this common interface that sits on top that gives the consumers of those interfaces the ability to talk in terms of a common object, even though it has vastly different representations across the framework. So we at the bottom layer here, some of these, if you go and dig into some of the DLLs that we've got, you know, system runtime is one such DLL that lives here. Threading is another. These are very runtime specific implementations. Sitting on top of this is the rest of the .NET Core stack, and we have basically self-contained components that, you know, say stream, you know, collections, and so forth, that live in here. Reflection, a few others. These are you know, have dependencies on the bottom layer and span layer and span runtimes. And pieces on top of it also just sit on top of these, and kind of, by the implicit nature of dependencies, the idea is that things like JSON.NET just sits on top and describes its dependencies in terms of assemblies or packages, and then they don't have to worry about that this thing is going to run on CoreCLR or
right,
whether it has to run on .NET Native.
So the one thing I want to add is that basically, if you look at the entire vertical stack, is that they all are individual NuGet packages. So there will be a package that represents the runtime itself. There will be a package that represents collections and all of that. The nice thing with NuGet is that NuGet conceptually is just a zip file that can provide multiple implementations.
Mm-hmm.
So what we will do is you will basically, Dave talked about this middle layer, which is the runtime abstraction layer, so to speak, right? So there will be implementations where the package itself says, I provide, let's say, system runtime. And then the package basically has different implementations for CoreCLR and .NET Native, right? So from a consumer's point of view, all looks the same and uniform, right? And you just describe yourself in terms of NuGet dependencies. Now, a file system is another one where you don't need a runtime differentiator.
Yeah, the file system isn't different between runtimes.
Yes.
It's more an OS difference, right?
Yes.
In WinRT environments, It sits on top of WinRT. In Win32 environments, it sits on top of Win32.
Yes.
And on other OSs, you know, that sits on top of their appropriate file system APIs. So this layer, while we don't consider it a runtime layer, it kind of sits at the top here, where while it gives the impression that there's a single implementation to the consumers of it, there's actually multiple implementations that we kind of just swap out.
How portable class libraries works? Or
yeah.
How exactly,
yeah,
how so do I think about when I choose which checkboxes to support for my PCL profile?
So in the past, we've kind of taken the ideas that we did with PCL, which was given a set of fixed platforms or frameworks that ship and are fixed and never changing? How do we give a view that is kind of lets consumers talk about them in terms very agnostically, you know, without having to worry about each individual platform? We've kind of taken those ideas, and PCL kind of lives at this level here, right? So we would consider this kind of a PCL level, but the difference between PCL of this of the new stack versus PCL of the old stack is the old stack, you were fixed, right? I target 4.5 and I'm targeting store, right? I get a set of APIs that I can't change ever. Mm-hmm. In the new world, the idea is that if I choose, say, ASP.NET vNext and .NET Native, then I can choose to bring down high, instead of getting a restricted view, I can bring down higher versions of DLLs that add additional APIs on top of this. So you don't get this, suffer from this common problem of lowest common denominator, right? What's the lowest common denominator across all these stacks? Instead, you get just basically NuGet package references and packages that you carry with the app. And then you don't have to worry about PCL anymore. PCL lives just at the very bottom layer here. You know, and with APIs that change less often, you know, object we haven't changed in you know, since 1.0 pretty much. Mm-hmm. So at this layer, you don't care that piece is not changeable between the stacks, right? It's more the things that churn over time, right? You know, if we want to add some new XML standards, or you want to change, you know, maybe do long file path or something, those kind of things. You want to be able to take those features without having to change your underlying stacks. And that's what the packages on top kind of enable. They, you, as we release newer versions, they'll just naturally work on the stacks that you're using.
Now, for a number of folks who are doing that cross-platform targeting, they're likely using Mono today,
yep.
Which had a number of these different collections already built in,
yep.
But weren't obviously targeting core CLR.
Yes.
So what are the, how are you working with the Mono project, and where do we kind of see the hey, they're going to implement this, or we're going to take their version, or
yep. So
how does that all
so in the,
blend
in,
together?
In the short term, we've what Mono are going to do in the short term is basically take literal copies of our implementation that we've put on Microsoft GitHub/Microsoft/reference source. There's a Git license of the bits that we've got in the full .NET framework that we've kind of put into a reference source that they can just grab today and consume. That's the short term. Long term, the idea is that they already support the PCL layers at this level here. So naturally, the pieces that just build on top of these, on top of PCLs, will just work on these platforms. So iOS, Android, Mono today, there's nothing stopping the immutable collections or the metadata or the, these XML, all sorts of, these libraries from just running on top of that. Now it is kind of a more long-term play, because we're still bringing these pieces up and trying to iterate on them. But Miguel's very much involved in the process. And if you go to .NETFoundation.org, you can see us communicating about the project, and Miguel and our team are very much involved.
Yeah, if you think about it from a product standpoint, what basically happens is that we have the .NET framework, which is thing that ships with Windows. And we have .NET Core, right? And on the same side, Mono is effectively, think of it as a clone of the full framework. So it shares pretty much all the problems and benefits that the full framework has, specifically around factoring. And so that's why, we license some pieces of the framework as under an open source license, so they can fill in the holes that they have in Mono right now. Mm-hmm. But as David mentioned, the goal is that we basically take .NET Core, and instead of having two forks, right, the full framework and Mono, .NET Core will be a single code base that will be cross-plat. And so that means .NET Core is basically the componentized version of either a Mono or the full framework, depending on how you look at that. And that is the thing that we work on with the Mono community as basically one team, right? And then that thing over time will basically become, I think, the de facto cross-plat implementation for our stacks.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you can think about it, we just kind of treat Mono as effectively another stack under here. You know, the benefit of it is that, you know, it still provides a runtime, but we get out of the business of having to provide these varying implementations of the BCL, and the BCL becomes a single BCL, right? And when people talk about the BCL, they talk about this thing that we've got, you know, on GitHub. And these libraries will just naturally just flow to over runtimes, you know, get out of the business of having to special case, runtime.
So you wouldn't have duplicative, anything above the line, if you will. The idea is not to have duplicative versions. You just make sure that you have
exactly the not only duplicate versions. You would have a single package that represents that thing. So when I reference systemcollections.dll, or the package, then I get a version that works across all my stacks, not just the Microsoft stacks, but the stacks across. You know, if you're doing device development, then iOS and Android. If you're doing Mono today, traditional Mono, then across that one as well.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So, you know, we talked about some of the things that I think probably, where should customers give feedback? Because you mentioned, one, the process of defining the process is still being developed, which is very meta. And also just general feedback on frameworks. And have you all started to think about, like, what is your wish list? Hey, community, we really wished we had X and X is, you know, some collection for, you know, big integer math or something like that.
So there's basically there's multiple answers to that. So the first thing is, like, you know, Dave, myself, and a bunch of others on our team are very, like, into the community work, right? So we're on Twitter, we're on Stack Overflow, answering questions about the product. The other part that we do is, like, on GitHub itself has an issue tracker. So, like, as far as concrete feature items go, like, that should go there. Mm-hmm. But we also have the forums on the .NET Foundation, which, by the way,
user voice, right?
We also have user voice. Yeah, I think as far as, like, depending on what you want to do, like, there may be, you know, better venues, right? So, like, if you want to do a discussion about cross-plat work, for example, the .NET Foundation forums are excellent, because if you go there today, you already find that half the threads are answered by Miguel, for example. Like, so he's very much like participating there. We are participating there. I answered a bunch of questions on open source from our side. So as far as discussions go, I think the forums are really great, because, you know, we use Discourse, which is an awesome software, by the way. Like, you know, you can just, it scales very well, like, even to 1,000 answers, and you know, it has likes and all of that. So it becomes a really easy way to actually share also larger thoughts, right? Mm-hmm. Versus GitHub, you have issues, but because of the way the issues work, there's just a flat list of comments. So, like, you're having a more complicated discussion on GitHub doesn't really scale for that. But as far as tracking item goes, like, you want to track that this is resolved, like, obviously an issue is better suited for that. So in terms of concrete asks, I think GitHub is the way to go. As far as strategy and process goes, I think in general, like, you know, why didn't you port X or Y yet? I mean, like, these kind of things really should go into the .NET Foundation. And then, you know, user voice, I think, is the one thing that user voice does incredibly well is that it has a nice voting system. So, you know, if you ask 100 customers, do you want a free cookie? Everybody says yes, right? But that's not helpful, right? What you really want is that we could do 10 things. Out of these 10 things, pick 3. So if you ask the customers to prioritize, you get a way better answer, because now you can say, oh, seems like most people really care about that one, and the rest is nice to have. And so the Stack Overflow really works great for things that are, you know, somewhat expensive for us to do or more long term, because it helps driving our, like, decision making process, right? For things that are really open source, you know, tiny things over time, I wouldn't necessarily go to user voice, right? But if things like, you know, vote for something, like, I don't know,
long file path.
Yeah, and so that's the. I think the answer to that. So, I mean, Stack Overflow is still, like, you know, as far as questions go, like, you can, you know, I did this, didn't work. That's still a way to go. But as far as, like, feature investment goes to, like, I don't know, I want Visual Studio to run on Mac, for example. That's not something that makes sense on GitHub, right? But that's something you would discuss on user voice, for example. And then, you know, smaller things, I mean, we're all on Twitter. If you just want to get our attention, like, you know, please comment on this issue or whatever, you know, sure, Twitter is great for that. But, you know, framing, like, a cohesive thought on Twitter is a bit
But the other thing is that I don't think we're not asking everyone to contribute. Like,
yes.
It's not a requirement that you contribute mm-hmm. something
yes.
or contribute code. You know, contribution could be as much as filing an issue or telling us, oh, I tried to port my app to this stack and this doesn't work, or, you know, we're missing this scenario. That's contribution in itself, or commenting on issues or commenting on code reviews. You don't have to submit code. That's not we don't think, not everyone is up for that. But if you want to, great. You know, we love the contributions. But yeah.
To give you a very concrete example, like just yesterday I was pinged by someone on Twitter who basically asked me, do you have a 101 on like OSS with Microsoft? And I said, well, I can give you my thoughts on that, but we haven't written this yet. And so he replied and said, yeah, I mean, you know, I can take a stab at that and write a blog post on that one. I mean, there's also a contribution, right? It's very meta, but I think, you know, given that, as I said, we're still trying to figure stuff out, like,
right.
Contributions happen at any level, right? You know, the process layer, like the actual code layer, and then, you know, commenting and like, just product.
And don't be afraid to call us on it, right? If we do something wrong or overstep our boundaries or do something that you think that we should have done better, call us out on it. I mean, that's our aim. Roslyn already got a bunch of feedback from the community around the way that they handled some things. And they're reacting based on that. So, I mean, this is supposed to be a learning process for us. You know, some of us are new to Git. We have a large team and not everyone interacts with the community. I mean, it kind of feels like, the same voice, the people who are visible to the community are kind of running the show, but they're not. Right, behind the scenes, there's tens of developers that all aren't on Twitter but call us when we're doing the wrong thing and
try to make it better.
And yeah. or add comments in this video.
Yeah, add comments in this video. Right.
So thanks, Emo, David. This is great. We should do this again when you guys have a bunch more stuff to add to the diagram that you have shipped.
Yes.
Yes.
Really appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.